Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi everybody, welcome to the Ruck Podcast. I'm here with Sam Warburton for the second time in the Ruck series on the eve of the Wales-England game. Sam, you had a great career with Wales and the Lions, but to be in the media now covering this game, surely this tops everything.
It's the most excited I've been for a game. And when you're a player, you don't allow yourself to get immersed in the occasion. You know it's there and you appreciate it, but and like both players, they're away in their respective camps in the week. Wales, you will go home on a Tuesday night, have Wednesday at home, come back on Thursday. So you have that sort of 36-hour period where you are exposed a little bit to the outside world, which can be bonkers on a Wednesday on a home game for Wales-England. So my wife will go out and do the food shopping. I'll deliberately walk the dog somewhere very quiet so I don't have to speak to anyone. You just want to try and hide away from it. You don't meet the press, you know. You do a press conference and somebody will ask you, Sam, what's your take on the comments of, I'm just making this up, say, on the selection between you and Justin Tipperick? And I'll generally be like, sorry, I don't know. Yep. You have to let me know what you're talking about. Because you do everything, just keep away from it and try and remain composed throughout the week because you just got to focus so much on the tactics. And like people want to ask players, what's it like pre-match when you play England? I think the fans want you to be like, oh, it's so... not all the fans, a lot of the Welsh fans, which, let's be honest, are very anti-English, you know, when it comes to these games. And they want you to be like, oh, yeah, you talk about, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of years ago when they came over and took all our houses and they killed us. It's like, oh, my goodness, that, like, we got a dartboard of Owen Farrell and we're all throwing things at it. Like that doesn't, sorry, but that doesn't happen. It's not like that. There's too much tactical information to take on board to allow yourself to get immersed in all that emotional personal stuff which you just haven't got space for. But it's amazing. Like, out of all the games I've played in, it's always been a privilege to be at home. It's the biggest game in 2 years for Wales, excluding World Cups. Yeah. It's the biggest game every 24 months because, you know, there's not a person in Wales that wouldn't even maybe not watch the game, but that won't be aware that the game is on. You know, yeah. It's just enormous.
Do you know what your record is against England personally?
I know I've won four times. I'm guessing I've won four, lost five, maybe.
Lost six. I think I reckon it's 4-6, which is
4-6.
Annoying.
I can't even recite them now. So I remember, yeah, my first game, I would have played 2010 and lost because we lost quite a bit in the early days. 2010, we would have lost. 2011, Six Nations, we lost. And then we were lost again in 2011 pre-World Cup, so we'd had a pretty poor run when I first came in. Then we did beat them pre-World Cup for a game. Then we beat them in 2012. Then we beat them in 2013. So we had a good run for like 3 years against them, so that's three apiece. 2014, we would have lost in the Six Nations. 2015, we would have won. 16-17, lost. Yeah, 6-4. Six-four in favour to England.
The 2013 game at Cardiff, would that be one of your best memories in the Welsh jersey against England or anyone? Because that was a day when they were favourites, but actually Wales did a spectacular job on them.
Single best memory that I've played in, from a team perspective, including the Lions and World Cup wins. And it wasn't because it was England, it was just because we were written off. Before that, we lost seven games in a row. We lost three tests to Australia in the 2012 Summer Series. We lost four Autumn Internationals. We dropped out of the top eight in the ranking. And that's when they did the World Cup draw. So we were going as like a sort of like a third tier, if that makes sense, nation, which is why we drew England in the World Cup along with Australia. So it was the only time in my career we dropped out of that top eight. So like things were going really bad from a Welsh perspective. And bearing in mind, we won the Grand Slam like 10 months before. So we just went from the World Cup semi to Grand Slam, from being riding the crest of a wave to then suddenly being like rock bottom, really. And then we lost the first game against Ireland, so I took it to 8 games in a row. So suddenly we were in a really bad place. And I remember Sonia McLaughlin interviewed me and said nobody's won the Six Nations after losing the first game for, I can't remember exactly, but it was 20-odd years. And but that didn't faze me. I just remember thinking, well, records are there to be broken. I didn't say that. I probably just said a normal diplomatic answer. But in my head I thought, well, it means so someone has done it then. Yeah. No, so it means you can do it then.
Yeah.
So that's why that tournament was amazing, because we just came back from not just the first game, it was from the previous 6 to 8 months, to come all the way back and win in such emphatic style as well. Completely against the run of play and what everyone was predicting. No one would have predicted that, you know. So that was why it was so unexpected. But as a team, we just stayed tight for 2 months and came out on top, which is why it was so special.
But you mentioned the England game is such a huge thing. And then, as you rightly say, we've got all the grudges of history in terms of Wales, and the people are looking back decades and centuries and all that. More recently, it's the big rivalry was, I mean, when I was young, it was that Wales was seen as a sort of classless team, working class people, whereas England, everyone thought they had huge cars and they had champagne and they were all from Oxbridge and the services. Obviously, that's slightly gone as well now, but what's the basis of the rivalry now? Because it's still as sharp as ever, but the history's changed.
Yeah, I remember asking the England boys this when you're away on like Lions tours. You just chat to them anyway when you cross paths various doing various sponsorship things anyway in the season or at games even. And I was like, "What's your biggest game of the Six Nations?" And they know they're all like Wales is obviously massive.
Yeah.
And I can't remember who I was chatting to. Maybe it was Faz or someone. He was like, "Mate, everyone hates us. Like, it's like every game for them is massive." He's like, and I do feel for the like England actually being England because as a country they have the most influence, the most power, the most wealth. Biggest population, you know, going back in history, like it is a little bit of, I think every country, they just don't want to have that inferiority to what is perceived as a superior nation from across the world, you know. So I think that's where it comes from. But I remember playing Wales in the 16s and we were playing England, and the working class thing from a Welsh perspective does come into it, I think. And the public school boy from England, because I remember like a lot of the Welsh boys would be like, right, let's get stuck into these public school boys, like they're all guys who've come from normal working backgrounds, terrace houses, families who aren't affluent, and we're playing against a bunch of public school boys. Like, that was a big motivation when you're a school boy coming through the ranks, like you're playing against these kids who go to private school and you hear they're paying 10, 20, 30 grand a year to go to school. It's like, flipping heck, that's the price of some of these boys' houses. You know, it's like, it's that. So that is a motivating factor when you're a kid. So that does carry through a little bit. But I think it's just I think you know how much it means to the country to beat England. And honestly, when you beat England, the day after, I walk the dog and cars are beeping, they're punching their arms out the air, and you just think, oh my goodness, you have no idea how many people you're making happy when you beat England, you know. And I think you have, that's the pressure that players carry into the game. And at the same time, when you lose,
you've let
the whole country down. Yeah. So I think you do really feel you're representing the people when you're playing England.
You see, when you're talking about when you're a teenager, you come across these England guys, but since then you've come across a lot of them really up close, on, as you see on the Lions tour, on your own team. Did most of them sort of, when you get to know them, are they basically decent rugby people like everybody else?
For rugby environments across the whole of the world, like, you're right, are fundamentally the same. So when you meet the England boys, maybe on my first Lions tour you do think, I wonder if they're going to be any different. But like, everyone gets on so well. I think they're obviously clever in their selection of the Lions tours, because they always make sure they pick good people as well as good players.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest, like, it upsets people when I'm doing Q&As in Wales and they go, who's the biggest idiot? Are the England boys idiots? And I'm like, you know what? They're all really good guys. Like, I really liked all of them. I can honestly say that. And I probably got on with the English lads better than a lot of the other nations, you know? So... No, so I unfortunately I can't add fuel to the fire for the Welsh people. I actually got on with the England boys really well, and I got a lot of respect for all of them.
People like their leaders, someone like Farrell, who, you know, he wouldn't come across well because to a Welsh team, because a guy like that, you always hate him if he's in the other team, but you love him if he's in your team. Is he what he appears in terms of ultra competitive and great team man?
Oh, I can't speak high enough of Owen Farrell. I have done in the past. And people say that. They like say, like, if you're Welshman or if you're Irish or Scottish, they'd be like, oh, we hate Owen Farrell. It's a massive compliment to him, because if Owen Farrell, like, randomly went into, like, say the guy who said that went into his workplace or something, saw him in the street, said, oh, you know what, mate, are you a rugby fan? I'd love to do a club presentation for you. For whichever club team your boy plays for, can I come and do a presentation?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that bloke was suddenly completely changed. He'd be like, oh my God, amazing. Please come in and do our club. And they'd suddenly be their biggest fan. Yeah. It's just a compliment, because he's such a good player, and the influence he has on your team, which is obviously a good influence on your team. You just naturally in sport, you just resent them because you're just envious of their ability. And yeah, as a leader and as a player, like, for me, like, Owen Farrell at some point has got to win World Player of the Year. It's just the influence he has on the England team is massive, you know, on and off the field. And I think he probably doesn't even realise the influence he has. But now, like, I've stepped outside, you know, I've played with him, and now I can see it from the other side of the fence. His influence is enormous, you know, and he's going to be, I don't mean to put too much pressure on him, but, like, you look back at the 2003 squad, I mean, they had so many iconic players back then, but you look, the obvious names just fly out to Martin Johnson, Johnny Wilkinson, Lawrence Dallaglio, and those boys. You know, this era now, Owen Farrell is that iconic English player of this generation, and will be remembered as a great, even if he finished tomorrow. So, he's been fantastic serving for England already.
Before we go on to the Welsh team, there's a big, I'm reading in the papers today that there's no drink zones in the stadium where, you know, you can't have a drink. So if you want to just watch the rugby, presumably go to one of these places if you just want to have a party. Now, there's no harm in having a party. People pay good money, they can do what they want. But is it an issue in terms of the team? Because we're now in the era of, like, mobile phones. Everyone wants to show all their friends where they are. Yeah. Everyone wants to have a drink. People are sitting down, coming back with a big tray. Does that distract it a little bit from the atmosphere?
It's a tough one, because I have spoken to a lot of fans. You know, now I guess I'm a bit more accessible to fans now, so I'm at more sort of public events and things. And so many of them say how the drinking thing really winds them up, and because they're quite wide blocks in Principality Stadium, people are standing up every 5 minutes, they say. So I can understand that frustration. But when you're on the team bus and you're coming down Westgate Street, and, like, if you're playing in, like, Murrayfield, it's civilised. In Ireland, in England, you go to Twickenham, it's very civilised. You know, they're all having their hampers. But then you go to Wales, and it's just people with short tops on. They got leak hats on. They've got pints spilling everywhere. They're going nuts as you're driving down. Like, part of me loves that. It's very Welsh, you know. Yeah. Like, everybody comes to town, and they're going to get steaming. Like, that is, that's it. And it's in the heart of the city, and so, yeah, I think it is great. Like, you know, we have 20, 30,000 fans maximum watching our regions a week.
Yeah.
Maximum. But we go to the stadium and send in the 75,000. So I do think, as a player, it's amazing to have. Because Wales, people just support the brand of Welsh rugby. They don't necessarily, I think there's probably 30, 40,000 fans in there who would never go to a regional game. But it's great that we have all these people jump on the international bandwagon and support the team. And they probably wouldn't be able to name, there's probably 30,000 people there, probably wouldn't be able to name the starting 15. But they go there because they want to support Wales. They're supporting their country. And rugby is probably the biggest vehicle to do that in this country.
Sure,
I love the fact that they do get a bit merry and make a lot of noise. So it's that balance. You do want to still keep it a little bit, like, you know, the French crowds are the most hostile when the French are playing well. But I think Welsh is quite close in the sense of the atmosphere and the noise. And that's one thing that I am very proud of as a Welshman. You know, anyone who goes to the stadium loves the atmosphere. So,
yeah,
it's good to have zones, but I do think we still need to, like,
need to go a bit mad.
Still need to go a bit mad. And there's a big drinking culture in rugby in Wales anyway, and that's never going to go. So yeah, I don't think you should completely ban that.
Just one thing that struck me there. You mentioned the regions. It's nice to come into go into the national squad with four or five wins behind you, I mean, which someone like, say, Saracens or Leinster would have. The Welsh team don't actually have that. I mean, all the regions lost on Sunday. And did you find it difficult when Cardiff, for instance, had not had a great run, because you're coming off the back of three or four defeats, and the same would apply to this Welsh team this season, because none of the teams are playing really well.
Yeah.
Or could you divorce it?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. It never actually played a part, because you straight away you kind of see it as two different entities for me, because the regions during my whole career really weren't we had some success, but nothing compared to like Leinster or Saracens. So I was quite used to going into campaign off the back of a bad run. But when you go into the Welsh camp, you just naturally just pick off, you pick up from where you left off in the previous campaign, which normally you're in a pretty good place, not always. So you just carried on from the Welsh national team momentum and just felt like that you put the regions to one side and you just picked back up where you left off with the international team. So that never actually never affected me. The morale was obviously better coming into camp when everyone won. But you kind of like leave the regions and those egos at the door when you go into the Welsh team. Sure. It's the same with the Lions, you know. Like people say, what's it like with the Lions? Is there banter with... It must be so difficult playing against those lads that you play against. So I'm like, well, not really, because you only play against them once a year on the big stage in the Six Nations, whereas for Wales, we all play against the other three regions multiple times throughout the year, knocking you know, lumps out of each other over Christmas, then we go in together in the Six Nations. So it's the same principle, sure, just on a bigger scale.
You could divorce it.
Yeah, sort of you could divorce it. So I've never thought the regions not performing going into campaign has been an issue.
Just going on to the actual teams playing on Saturday, as we speak, we're not sure what they'll be, but we do know that England, on the evidence of the game against Ireland and France, it's no absolutely no revelation to say they're a very, very powerful team. Powerful carriers, Billy Vunipola, Courtney Laws, could be Maro Itoje, we don't know yet, could come back, Manu Tuilagi, etc. How do you counter that in terms of sheer power? Is it the only way you can counter it is sheer power in defence and sheer power in the tackle?
The only time it hasn't been that, normally you do have to match fire with fire. There's only one way around it. The only time we did something completely different, and it kind of did revolutionise the defensive system a bit for a few years, was we were playing Ireland in the quarterfinal, and this is where Dan Lydiot really came into his own. Mm. I remember Sean Edwards saying they had Stephen Ferris, Jamie Heaslip, Sean O'Brien, and they had some really big carriers in their team, like Keane Healy, those boys. And they said, right, every single tackle this week, which is quite, it was very unconventional. Sean Edwards was like, we're going to just chop tackle them. Everything round the legs, like, don't go high on any player all game. And we literally went completely low. Now, I don't think, but it worked. You know, we won that game. Ireland, I think Sean O'Brien made a total, out of all his carries, he made 2 metres all game. Because we just went in with this effective game plan. I don't think that you can do that against England. I don't think that'll happen. I don't think they'll say something that drastic. So I think on this occasion, you do need to match fire with fire. You have got to defend against England with so much venom, and you've got to be aggressive, you've got to be violent. All legally, these sound like nasty words, but rugby at its heart is that. It is confrontational, and you have to do that for first 3-4 phases of defence. I think on this occasion, I think that's what Sean will be getting the boys to do. It's just, and Wales haven't hit those physical peaks yet that they reached when they played Australia, when they played South Africa in the autumn, but it's there. Like, they can do it, it is there. So England, I'm pretty sure, will probably continue with the momentum they've created over the past two weekends, but Wales do physically, and they know that. I'm not saying anything they don't know. They know they have to come up a level physically to be able to get a result on Saturday for sure.
You wrote in the Sunday Times last Sunday that you made certain selections which seemed to be based a little bit on physicality, such as Dan Bigger, we'll come back to the fly half in a minute, and Gareth Davis, Jake Ball. These are guys, I'm not saying you rubbished anybody else, but was that countering fire with fire, the likes of Jake Ball and Gareth Davis?
Do you know what? I admit I'm wrong now. So when I did that column, on a spectrum, if I had England at one end and Wales on the other end, after the first two weekends, I thought 100% England are going to win against Wales. And as the week has gone by now and a couple of weeks are passing, on the spectrum now, I'm slowly sliding towards Wales. And I'm being a hypocrite, because when I was in the 2015 World Cup, I remember I was on the physio bed and Martin Williams texted me good luck. I remember texting back, oh, thanks very much, we're going to win by, like, and I said, like, a score prediction. I said, we'll definitely win, mate. And then I remember the girl who was giving me soft tissue treatment at the time, she's like, why are you so confident? I was like, because England have picked a team to play Wales. They haven't picked a team to be England.
Yeah.
They picked a team to counter us, you know. You've got to be true to yourself and play the best version of rugby you can play. So I picked a team in my last column, a little bit concerned about the English physicality, which is why I went with Bigger at 10. But then, like, as I've been thinking about it, I thought, no, actually, Wales have got to stay true to their game plan, stay true to themselves and play the style of rugby they've been trying to nurture and develop. So actually, they should probably stick with Anscombe, who emerged as their number one 10. And when I watched the game again against Italy, he came on and got the team moving again. that's what I think actually Wales need to do against England. I think they need to try and play outside of their, you know, off the ruck. They've got a very aggressive 5-6 man blitz where the forwards are, and they're punishing teams at the moment with it because teams are running straight into it with not much sort of deception in their attacking play. I actually think you need Anscombe, you need a bit more deception, perhaps go wider a bit early on. This thing about you must go tight before you go wide is rubbish. You can expose teams wide straight away if you can get there effectively. So I think Wales actually need to stay true to their selection policy, which they've done over the past sort of 6 months. I would actually, I admit I'm probably a bit wrong actually, even though I think Bigger has got fantastic qualities and is the sort of player who would relish this occasion. I would actually stick with Anscombe. I would go with Jake Ball though in the second row, because you do need that physicality. And you need some hitters there. I always say this in international rugby, you need two or three hitters in your team. You know, big hitters and carrying in attack and defence. But my 10 section, I would actually change my mind and go back to Anscombe.
Okay, don't worry. In the media, you can change your mind every 5 minutes we want to. Everybody else does. Yeah, that in that way, you can never be wrong. Okay. You're talking about playing the Welsh game. Where can Wales hurt England on Saturday? We know where they can England can hurt Wales, but where can Wales hurt England?
So people are talking a lot about England's physicality, which is pretty obvious, and they're talking about their kicking game. But then I'm watching the kicking game. I don't think the English Welsh coaches will worry too much about it. They might expose us with a good kicking game, but I was looking at where the fullbacks have been positionally against France. I mean, they were... I don't know who was coaching the back three. I'm not even a back three player, and I couldn't believe how bad they were in the backfield. The fullback was all over the shop. I know Huguet in his defence is a winger, but those kicks through wouldn't have the success against Wales that they had against France. They just won't, because the fullback will be there. If England do pick out, they do a play where they can tie in the Welsh back three, and then they expose us. Then well done. You know, that's tactically very good of them. But I think two of those tries that happened on the weekend would never happen against Wales. So I don't think the coaches are worried too much about that. You can fix that. I think Wales would hurt England, and teams have done it a bit, but not in massive success, is, yeah, you've got to be physical. That's always the game of rugby. But I thought this was the same when we played South Africa in the autumn. I actually said pre-match, I was working for BBC, I think Wales actually need to play outside South Africa's defence quite early and take a few risks. I think that's what we've got to do this weekend. I think you've got to throw a different picture at England. Sometimes you've got to fight fire with fire, and that will happen. But I think we've got to throw a different picture at England and actually just get them uncomfortable playing at our home stadium and go wide early, try and expose Johnny May, try and put him under pressure as a key player and as a key guy for England. I'd probably be quite surprised and try and go wide a little bit early. And there's times you've got to go narrow, of course, but... got to throw a different picture in England and make them uncomfortable. And that's why I think Anscombe would be a good selection.
It's Warren's last Six Nations, which is very sort of emotional. And people like yourself have been with him all the time. Could we bank on Warren and Sean together every now and again against the odds? They can work miracles. Do you think it's highly likely that Warren's got something up his sleeve, whether it's going wide early? But would you back him to come up with something?
I think what they'll do this weekend, people probably say, well, why don't they do this every weekend? But like naturally all the ingredients aren't there to do this. But on a game of this magnitude, I think their biggest challenge is getting the players just purely in the right frame of mind. And people say, well, they should be in the right frame of mind every week. But like, for whatever reason, that doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Otherwise, everybody would be playing the best rugby of their life every week of the year, of their career. So... if they can get Wales, like England were at that physical, emotional peak against Ireland. Like you could see it the way, like, you know, Tom Curry was sent sin-binned after 10 minutes. They've been told to go out there and just punish the Irish physically. I think Wales will probably have a similar message and try and do that to England, you know, in defence, I think, but in particular. So Wales got to those levels against Australia, South Africa. They conceded one try in two games. Haven't been as convincing in the last two games, but it's there. Like, you know it's there. That's what I think all the coaches got to do is just try and get that out of the players, you know. So they'll probably use their experience. They're not going to be barking at the players on a Monday, Tuesday, getting them emotionally peaking then. They'll just slowly build the week nicely from Monday through to Friday. And then by the time you finish your team run Friday, the players will get in. They'll be on the stadium, on the pitch. You get in your huddle. It's the last time you sort of speak to the players before the match day, really. And I think you just got to get them just... at that point in time, you've got to be so confident you're going to deliver and do everything the week right that you can actually enjoy the next 24 hours. And all you're doing, you're literally just watching your watch and just waiting for kickoff because you just want to get out there and punish them. So you've got to get them in that frame of mind by Friday. So they've got time to do that. But I think they'll use their experience to drag that out of the players.
How do you get people in frame of mind? In the old days, you used to bang on the, bang heads together, etc. What would Warren be fairly quiet but forceful? Would he ever
That's his style. He is quiet but forceful. And like when he did the Scotland interview last year, Wales played Scotland at home and they had a very convincing win first step, which nobody saw. People thought this was the year Scotland were going to travel away from home and put a real performance in against Wales and win. And Gatland did his BBC post-match. And it didn't surprise me, but I laughed at the same time because he probably hasn't been this brutally honest. But he said, I told the players that we'd batter them. And which came across really disrespectful to Scotland, but that's what he says in team meetings. And if he says we're going to batter them, and he'll list the reasons why, and he'll go through the pack weight, he'll go through the individual players that we've got and what they've done and how many big games they've played in and how many times they've delivered. Sometimes you sit there and you think, we will. And you genuinely believe him. And I think that's what he's got from the players. The hardest thing for a coach to get, I think any international player would agree, or any coach at professional level, the hardest thing you have to do is get buy-in from the players. And Warren's got that in abundance from the squad that he's got. So if he can get complete buy-in and get them all to believe and trust in him for these big games, which they will, then it goes a long way towards winning. Don't get me wrong, England can come up with some sort of masterstroke tactical decision which can separate the teams. Often games like this, it is one moment which separate teams. And so many times I've heard like Warren say in a meeting, like England-Wales now, there's nothing to pick between them, really. There's hardly anything to pick between England-Wales. Even Ireland and like all these top teams, there's not much to pick. It often takes like one moment of brilliance or X factor from a player. So in England's example, it could be Owen Farrell or Johnny May, or from Wales, it could be not necessarily like a half a metre try. It could be a massive turnover, or it could be a really big hit when you've been defending your try line for 10 minutes, or it could be an amazing release of pressure from winning a penalty from a scrum. You need one of your big experienced players, and we'll see it on Saturday. Someone's going to step up for a big moment from either team, and it could be the one that separates these two sides. So you're looking for a big moment from a key experienced player like that as well.
Finally, on the game, you've made a big thing of you think Wales have got to be really ultra competitive at the breakdown. Have they got the players in Josh Navidi and Tipperick, and maybe one or two of the backs to cause England serious problems there? And do you think that's one of the keys?
That's why I think England haven't been challenged as much lately as they will do against Wales, is the breakdown threat. So which is why I think Wales, that's why I went with the Nicky Smith selection in my Sunday Times column at Loose Head. And then on Rob Evans on the bench. I mean, another game I'd start Rob Evans, but for this game tactically, I would go with Nicky Smith. I'd just really try and make that ruck and breakdown really uncomfortable for England and make it a complete mess. Like, when I used to compete at breakdowns, you're not always going to get turnovers, but I think, right, when I go into this and compete, I'm going to be violent when I'm in there. I'm going to be a right nuisance. I'm going to be dragging players out with me. I'm going to be like kicking the ball. I'm going to be just making a mess of it. Just putting their nine under a massive amount of pressure. Ben Youngs when it comes to box kicking and counter rucking. I think Nicky Smith brings that, Josh Navidi brings that, Justin Tibbett brings that, Alan Wynn, Jake Ball is a big counter-ruck threat. That's why I went with those boys, because I just think, England are kicking a lot of ball, which means you've got to disrupt them at source, and you've got to affect their ruck and their speed of ball, and like that's why I pick players like that. So, I have a really big focus on getting on that ball. It might be Jacqueline, it might be more turnovers, as Wales are really good at probably. I like to see statistically actually who's one of the most more turnovers in Six Nations. I think it's probably Wales from what I've seen. I might be wrong, but they're very good at that. And then like rips, so like the backs are really good at doing rips where like a carrier might go in too high and you just sort of we just call it like a chainsaw. Like when you're starting a chainsaw, you put your arm in and you just rip your arm out. You're not going for the tackle, you're just going for the ball, and the Welsh backs are very good at that. If they can be effective at those aspects of the game as well. It's only one little nugget of it, but I think that could be could really help them to get a result as well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no,
yes. How would that go in the
booth? Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
I'm not asking you for a news story here. I'm just asking you what your thoughts are. Warren's coming to the end of his Welsh career. I could name teams like France, Ireland, urgently looking for a new head man, new head coach. Do you expect to see Warren departing for New Zealand at the end of this season?
I don't see many coaches going to France, purely because they don't give the coaches the control that they need. Mm. If you went to France, you'd need to change so much. You need to change your whole backroom staff. You need to change your selection policy, even the way things are probably running in the league. I think it's such a big job to do there in France. It would be a brave decision. I'd love to actually see a coach go there, someone like of Gatland's ilk, go to France, see what they could do. But I'm not sure the French Federation, from what I've heard and chatting to Philippe Saint-André recently, and I was asking him, I was like, I actually really want to know what's going on, like in France, like what do you think is going wrong?
Yeah.
And he said those reasons. He's like, it's just the coaches are not getting the control they need, and if they are, they're not doing the right job. And like, there's coaches and players gone over to France, and I don't want to talk ill of France, but they're miles behind.
Yeah.
They're miles behind Ireland, England and Wales and Scotland from an organisational point of view. They got great money, they got great facilities, and they got great players, but I don't think they're being coached properly, and I don't think the infrastructure in the clubs and the federation is what it needs to be competitive. And you can see that, like, it's not just a 2 year off period they're having, they've been off now for quite a while.
Yeah.
Since 2011, really, they've been off.
But don't you think that when it comes to you and everybody else in the world, including Frenchmen, including the French players, have been really aghast at what they were like at Twickenham. Surely you couldn't have too many of those before you say, hey, we have got to change everything, like, as you said.
It's got to happen. There's got to be a change somewhere down the line in France. It's got to be a moment where the penny drops and they suddenly think, right. And they've always had, I'm not saying French coaches aren't the answer. I guess, I'm not going to say names, but I've been speaking to players who have gone to France, and these are top international players, and top internationals, and they said they've been in a changing room for a game, they've linked arms in a circle, and they're all counting to do sit-ups from 1 to 10 in French, like to wind themselves up. And I'm just thinking, this is, and I'm talking now teams who are trying to compete at Champions Cup rugby, this is berserk, like how old-fashioned and old-school the thought process is. And like, it's not that, that's just one little example, but it's the same when it comes to all aspects of play. I'm just like, they're just miles behind. There's only talent that you can buy for your team at Toulon can only take you so far. Yeah. And you question, like, now the organisation of Johnny Wilkinson has gone, maybe that's why they're falling apart a bit, because they've got no one who's actually organising the game plan anymore, which they need. So maybe, I'm not sure if the French coaches are a little bit old-fashioned and they're not suited to the modern-day game. And they think that banging the chest and headbutting props in change rooms before the game is going to work. It doesn't work these days, you know, and that's why I think they're fundamentally wrong. But sorry, to go back to your question about Gatland, I do expect him to probably go back home and probably enjoy some family time and enjoy a bit of a break, because, you know, like, he's got his daughter Gabby, his son Bryn, who's doing really well, playing Super Rugby now. And, you know, while he's been over here, I remember Bryn being a young boy who was like, come over to watch us train, and he'd be kicking with Lee Halfpenny afterwards, and he was like, you know, 10 years of age, 11, 12 years of age. And we thought, oh, this is great for him to kick with, like, Lee Halfpenny. Next thing you know, I'm lining against him for the Lions, for the Provincial Barbarians.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Gatlin's like missed a lot of that because he's been over here. So I think he probably will enjoy some family time in New Zealand. some time to reflect on his career, and he'll be back in the coaching game for sure. But yeah, I expect it to be back in New Zealand, or who knows, maybe the British and Irish Lions.
He should do, in my opinion, should, because the Lions is now a totally different coaching job to anything else. You can't go away and prepare for hours and weeks and weeks and weeks. You've got one evening to do it, haven't you? That's all.
I think the Lions, there's been a bit of change, in the hierarchy. John Fian's left, and they've got a new CEO, and I'm sure they do a fantastic job, but you can't have too much change, in any high performing environment. So I'm pretty sure that there's probably a spine of coaches, which they're going to look at and think, right, we need these guys for the next tour, because if there's too much change and brand new coaching staff going to South Africa, who will be good come next Lions tour, they'll be good at this World Cup, they'll be good. It could be a recipe for disaster. So I think they're probably desperate to have someone like Gatland and Andy Farrell to stay on board for the next tour as well.
Actually, two more questions about Six Nations. First of all, when you played Italy with Wales, it was just any other game. You had to beat them. You didn't want to lose them, because that would have been a disaster. Now you've retired and you've taken a step back, should we be worried about Italy? Because they're actually really at the moment, they were competitive against Wales when it wasn't a full Welsh side, but you really struggle to think where they're going to win this year and where their next win is going to come from. No one's been critical of them, but that you do start to feel worried about them now.
There's no progression. And yet, if Italy played Italy 10 years ago, they probably are better than they were 10 years ago, but so are Wales, so are England, so are Ireland, so are Scotland. Not France, but the four home nations. Every year, the bar goes up. So, yeah, I'm sure the bar in Italy is going up. I'm sure they look at their fitness statistics and, their players are fitter and they're better athletes than they were 5 years ago, but so is everyone else. They've got to have a drastic jump, and I don't think they've got the player pool. I'm not saying it's a coaching thing. I'm sure that the coaches, they're coaching them the same things that they'd be coaching other international teams, but I just don't think they've got the resources from a player perspective. They just don't have the resources.
And two more things, finally. The Six Nations itself, you're so engrossed in it as captain of any country, especially Wales. But now you've taken a step back. Have you realised what an unbelievable, fantastic thing it is?
I was in Twickenham for the England-France game, and I was just watching it from afar in the stands, and the teams came out, and even though it wasn't Wales playing, I looked at Guillaume Garrido, who's the French captain. I thought, that's been me on four occasions at Twickenham. But you don't realise that you see this massive stadium of people cheering, going nuts, and you obviously you're running out in front of 80,000 people. But then the guy who was sat next to me, he just said, "How do you feel watching this now?" He said, "That was you, wasn't it?" I said, "Mate, I was just thinking the same thing. I actually can't believe I went through this four or five times, because I played there in the World Cups as well against Australia and stuff." And I was actually just staring at the pitch, thinking, "I used to do that. I can't believe I used to put myself through this, and." And now I'm on the other side of the fence. And Martin Williams said the same thing. Because when you're in the changing room, you don't see the flames. You don't see the crowd getting excited 5 minutes before kickoff. You're in the dungeon of Principality Stadium or Twickenham. No natural light. You can't hear anything. And suddenly you're just exposed to it. You don't see all the hype. You don't read the press in the week. You don't get excited about the match. You keep it calm. Now I can do that. I enjoy the tournament a lot more now as a fan and appreciate it a lot more. And now I do look back and think, oh my goodness, I went through that. It's amazing, So, yeah, you try and dampen everything down as a player. You don't want to make too big a thing of it. But now I can really enjoy the Six Nations for what it is.
You've given a real brilliant insight into the two teams, characters, tactics, the whole thing. But now at the end, we're going to have to ask you a very difficult question.
And we're going to run out of battery quick. Oh, sorry, can't give it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll make it easy for you. Do your head and your heart say the same result?
So, if I was watching it purely on the last two weekends of rugby, I would say England are going to win, as I'm sure most people would. But when I was a player, and I'm still in this mindset, and the same as New Zealand, if anyone said when I was playing New Zealand, can you win on the weekend? I'd think, well, what a stupid question. Yes. I'm not saying we're better than New Zealand. So in this situation with Wales and England, if you look, judge it on the Six Nations, England are better than Wales. But that's just fact for the last two games. They've played better than Wales. Can Wales win? Absolutely, because it's sport. Of course you can win. So it's two completely different questions. Yeah, I can admit New Zealand are better than us because they've won World Cups. We haven't won World Cups. They've had amazing running streaks. We haven't had them. So yeah, they're better than us. But can we beat them? Absolutely. So even though I'm sort of in because I want Wales to win, can Wales win? Of course they can. They can easily win if they want to, but then so can England. So it's very much, I'm 55-45, and I'll be honest, in favour of England, which is why I think it might be like a 2-point win for England. Mm. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong, and Wales definitely can win. But if I'm going to judge it off the past two weekends and throw in a couple of other things into the mix, if I had to put my neck on the line, I'd say an England 2-point win.
And you're looking forward to the weekend because you've got other duties, but also you haven't got to stand out there, or would you part? You still like to be standing out there?
No, I can appreciate I've done that now. I'm really happy. I'm enjoying it as a player, as a fan. I can appreciate I've done it as a player. I just really love the occasion as a fan now, and I watch the game and I love it. But you know, I still haven't forgotten what I felt like when I came around with my neck up and things like that. So I don't want to put myself, and like, you know, I saw the injury Ellis Jenkins went through against South Africa, and that was the knee injury I used to really freak out about when I was in that jackal position. So yeah, now I'm just actually just loving being a fan, enjoying the occasion, getting involved in all the hype. And I appreciate I've done it, and I'm fortunate I've played England on 10 occasions. I didn't realise it was that many. Played England on 10 occasions and been part of that 10 times, which is 10 times more than 99.9% of people. So I still feel very privileged. So now I can enjoy it from this side of the fence now, and a lot more pain-free, a bit more coffee and chocolate, and it's lovely.
Sam Warburton, thanks a million, Sam.
Cheers, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And the Ruck's back next Monday when we'll be chewing over the bones of the game to see if we got it all right or all wrong.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.